A good Erev Shabbos, Parshas Vayishlach. Rudolf Dassler was born on March 26, 1898, in the small German town of Herzenaurach. 2 years later, his younger brother Adolf was born on November 3, 1900. Being so close in age, they were more than just brothers. They were best friends. And they shared dreams of starting their own business together as well. After a few years of them both trying their hands in different fields, in 1923, Rudolf and Adolf founded a shoe manufacturing company they named the Dassler Brothers Sports Shoe Factory. The company started off slowly, but after four-time Olympic gold medalist Jesse Owens wore their new innovative spike sneaker at the 1936 Olympics, their company soon gained global recognition. By the time World War II began, they were selling nearly 200,000 pairs a year. However, by the mid-1940s and the war in full swing, Rudolf had become power-hungry in the firm and was seeking to take control. He denied employment to their own sister Mary's sons so that no more family members would be involved in the company. As a result, both of Mary's sons were drafted and killed during the war. Adolf was infuriated at the selfish move. Family tensions continued to grow as the wives of both Adolf and Rudolf began to quarrel with one another. As the war moved on, the German military granted Adolf a leave from military service as his presence in the shoe company was deemed necessary, while Adolf was forced to enlist. Rudolf viewed his brother as responsible for having him sent off to war, so Adolf could take control of the business all by himself. After the war ended, Rudolf was first arrested by the Allied forces for the suspicions involving his relation to the SS. He tried to plead his case, but his own brother Adolf testified against him. He remained in prison for another year while Adolf controlled the business and gained more power. In 1946, Rudolf devised statements claiming that while he was away from the company during the war, Adolf was a mastermind behind weapon production in the factory for the Nazis, and that he, Rudolf, was innocent and would have stopped him if he was around. Although the Allied panel didn't believe Rudolf's claims, that was the last straw on the camel's back. And the relationship of the Dassler brothers, which had slowly been deteriorating throughout the war, had now become almost unforgivable. Outraged with one another's actions and the constant struggle to gain power, the Dassler brothers divided the company and all its assets and employees in 1948. Adolf Dassler, or known better by his nickname Adi, started Adi Dassler. And Rudolf started his own company, Puma. Almost certainly the creation of Adidas and Puma, rival companies brought tremendous growth and development in the area of sports, shoes, and equipment. There was horrific fallout for the family as well, because the negotiations that the two brothers conducted while separating the company will be the last time the Dassler brothers would ever speak to one another, even though they both lived in the same small German town together for the next 30 years. Family feuds aren't limited to game shows or historical personalities. Arguments, fights, and disagreements happen in our lives between friends, at work, and perhaps most commonly amongst family members. And no one, no family, no person, no society, no time in history are immune from them. The Torah, being an honest reflection and expression of humanity, is replete with narratives of disagreements, arguments, and skirmishes. Cain and Hevel, Yitzchak and Avimelech, Yaakov and Esav, Yosef and his brothers, Moshe and Korach. However, perhaps one of the most important yet little known arguments takes place in this week's Parsha, and is that argument which we will explore today. A complete and utter atrocity, mass murder, genocide of an entire people. Jacob is furious. He cannot believe it. How could his own sons, Shimon and Levi, his own flesh and blood, be the perpetrators of such a horrific crime against humanity? They murdered an entire city, the city of Shechem. On top of that, they have now put their entire family in tremendous danger. The neighboring peoples will all view Yako's family as a dangerous parasite, which need to be exterminated, lest his insane sons try to wipe them out as well. And yet, the righteous indignation of Shimon and Levi was no less intense. Our sister was kidnapped and raped repeatedly, and no one in the entire city did a thing about it. They were all complicit in her abduction and rape. What kind of society endorses such decrepit and repugnant behavior? And it wasn't just a lowlife in this city who did it. It was the son of the king, the prince, and his father, the king, endorsed it. He even had the audacity to suggest we allow our sister to marry that thug of a son of his. No. This was an act of war. And if the rest of the citizens of the city must die in retribution or as collateral damage, so be it. We had no choice. We need to send a message to both this city and the neighboring towns that Jewish blood isn't free. You can't just kidnap and rape our daughters and think that we will stand idly by. If they think they can get away with kidnap and rape, God only knows what they will try next. We will not go as sheep to slaughter. A message had to be sent loud and clear. Emotions are fuming on both sides. Both are convinced that they are correct, that God is on their side, that they are acting with the best intentions for the safety and well-being of themselves and their family. Both are convinced that the other side's opinion will put their entire family in mortal danger. It's literally a life and death argument. And yet, despite this intense argument, despite the real raw emotions and stakes at play here, it didn't lead to the end of their relationship. The aftermath of this fight wasn't Levi and Shimon storming off away from Yaakov in bitter anger. Yaakov didn't lose his connections with his two sons. They still talked to each other. They still remained part of the family. So much so that it was Levi who begot Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon HaKohen, two of the greatest leaders of the Jewish people. So how? How did they do it? How did this argument not escalate? No question, the stakes were just as high, if not higher, in this disagreement as they were with the Dassler brothers. And yet the results were so different. Rudolf and Adi never spoke to each other ever again, while Yaakov and his two sons remained committed, close members of the family. How? What was different? What was Yaakov's secret in being able to keep his connection to his children alive and well? Were there special soothing words that Yaakov said to keep his sons close? What did he do differently? Perhaps the secret isn't in what Yaakov said, but rather in what he didn't say. Because if we look inside at the Psukim, we will notice that after Yaakov's initial rebuke of Shimon and Levi and their intense emotional reaction and response, Yaakov doesn't say anything. He's silent. He recognized and realized that him speaking up again and retorting would not accomplish anything positive. They would not respond well. He saw how personally hurt they were by the situation and how much pain they were in. And at that point, he realized right now is not a good time for him to respond and to rebuke them. So instead of saying anything, he chooses silence. If I want to get through to them, I'm going to have to do it at a time when emotions aren't running so high, when they'll be more open to my critique. He let them have the last word and saved his response for a later time when they would be more ready to hear it, which he does do many years later on his deathbed when his sons are older, more mature, and more open to hearing the words of their dying father. At that point, Yaakov gives rebuke to his sons for their actions in Shechem. But in the moment, when emotions are running high, and for years and years after, Yaakov kept his comments to himself. No matter how badly he wanted to say something, no matter how much he thought that he was right and they were wrong, he bit his lip. Because to Yaakov, it wasn't about winning. It didn't matter that for years and years his sons thought they had won the argument with him. It wasn't about who was going to have control over the family or the shoe company. He didn't take their disagreement with him as a personal offense. He didn't allow power, control, money, or glory get in the way and distort what really mattered, relationship with family, with his children. Yaakov made sure to see the bigger picture, and he realized that losing a relationship with one of his sons wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth losing so much more for the sake of winning the argument, winning the fight. The Talmud tells us that just as everyone's faces look different, so too everyone's minds and way of thinking are different as well. No two people, no matter how close they might be, see the world the same way. Disagreements are inevitable. They are a part of life. We have to make sure to always see the bigger picture. Because we have a choice. In those moments, in the few moments before disagreement becomes heated, before, God forbid, when we lose control, we can choose to stop, to not say anything further, to not allow the disagreement to turn to an argument and fight. It's not about who is right and who is wrong. Our spouses, children, friends, co-workers are not our opponents. And God forbid, treating them as such has a long-lasting impact well beyond the length of the argument. It's not about winning. Life isn't a game with a scorecard. Because when we focus on the big picture, when we place peace and harmony at the top of the mantle, when we care more about each other than about winning, then our relationships will merit to be a source of blessing for ourselves, our families, our community, and the entire Jewish people. I wish everyone a beautiful, relaxing, and invigorating Shabbos.